We have got a regular guest with us today, and that is Julia De Silva. And it has been such a pleasure to be following her journey with little Aurelia. Julia, how's your week been? Have you had a few moments of grey?
It's been quite gnarly. It's so hard when they're so sick and you just feel so terrible for them, and especially for her, because she is such a kind of relaxed, happy little baby. You know, when she is unhappy, and especially like last night, I mean, she was inconsolable. And I think it was because her tummy was sore and maybe she was feeling nauseous, and there was nothing I could do.
This is actually one of the biggest killers of babies in Africa, because they just don't get good enough care when they do have that.
Welcome to Sense by Megphora, the podcast that's brought to you by ParentSense, the app that takes guesswork out of parenting. If you're a new parent, then you are in good company. Your host, Megphora, is a well-known OT, infant specialist, and the author of 8 parenting books. Each week, we're going to spend time with new mums and dads just like you to chat about the week's wins, the challenges, and the questions of the moment. Subscribe to the podcast, download the ParentSense app, and catch Megphora every week to make the most of that first year of your little one's life. And now, meet your host.
Welcome back, mums and dads. This is Sense by Megphora, and we have got a regular guest with us today, and that is Julia De Silva. And it has been such a pleasure to be following her journey with little Aurelia. I bumped into a mutual friend of ours recently, just yesterday, and we were talking about Julia, and I said, she is so wise. The amount of things that I learned from her on the podcast, she said, yes, as a mom, you're one of those people who has got such good instincts. So there you go. We were both complimenting you, Julia.
Oh, that's quite something coming out of your mouth, Meg. And I think of you as the oracle of all things, baby.
No, I definitely am not. And I mean, there's been a couple of things that I really have taken away from our sessions together. We had that one chat when we spoke about thriving in the gray, which to this day has become something that I've really latched onto, because I do think in parenting, we try and make everything black and white and according to the rule book. And these are the gold standards. And of course, just nothing ever goes according to plan. So thriving in the gray is what it is about. So I love that one. I really do.
That's something that they teach you. I think it's something that we can know in theory. And certainly I think I did know in theory, but I think you really learn it on the job when you're a parent.
Yeah, no, you certainly do. And just when you think you've got something down pat and you've sorted it out and you know what the routine is and you know what that signal means and you know what's coming next, they throw it all in your face and everything has to change again. So yes, it is thriving in the gray. Julia, how's your week been? Have you had a few moments of gray?
It's been quite gnarly. It was all going smoothly. And yesterday she had a 3-hour sleep in the morning. I thought, well, that's very nice. Preceding that, she had slept 2 nights in a row she'd slept through, which is very unusual. Normally it's sort of one here and there. And I thought, okay, wow, this is it. I finally cracked it. And then yesterday morning she'd had this 3-hour sleep. And I thought, ooh, well, that's nice. Okay. And then the afternoon there was a 2-hour sleep. And I was like, okay, well, I'm obviously an expert now at momming. And then lo and behold, at bedtime, I put her down and she screamed for hours and hours. And I think she has a tummy bug. And so we were up all night. So if I struggle to find the words for things or am otherwise a little bit brain damaged, just because I haven't slept very much. And I feel like, roadkill. So it's been a bit of a hectic 24 hours. But other than that, not too bad.
Oh, shame. And with the tummy bug, was she vomiting or diarrhea or both?
So a bit of both. Luckily, it wasn't too bad. And obviously, on the upside, she has been absolutely happy to eat and to drink her bottles. So we don't have any issues with dehydration, which I'm sort of grateful about. She only really vomited twice, and she's had a couple of very suspect nappies, but not in the last 15, 18 hours. So I think it's the case of where she was a little bit sick yesterday, and obviously it was kind of brewing, and that's why she was having those long sleeps. And then she did sort of vomiting yesterday afternoon. And I think that she has kind of worked through it. And it's the case of, as we all know, when we have a tummy bug, we just feel really pup the next day. So she is just a bit flat today.
Yeah. So, I mean, you bring up some really, really good points there. So the first one is those very long sleeps. And, you know, I think very often they do those super long sleeps just when they're brewing something. They're uncomfortable, they're not feeling great, and they do these massive long sleeps. So not to make moms anxious if their babies do long sleeps, because they can do them, you know, randomly. But certainly a 3 hour and a 5 hour. Is she 32 weeks now?
32, yeah.
Yeah. So certainly, you know, those sort of sleeps at that age, you know, I would kind of be watching it. It wouldn't be normal to have such long sleeps. So, you know, probably we could have known that she was brewing something. But I do also want to just chat about diarrhea and vomiting and just the risks therein. You know, obviously she had a very mild tummy bug, which is fabulous. But recently, just towards the end of last year, there was actually a baby who actually died of norovirus in Jersey. And that was just utterly devastating. And, you know, what's interesting is that diarrheal disease is actually one of the biggest killers of babies in Africa, because they just don't get good enough care when they do have that. And you made a very good point that she's eating and drinking well. So, and the key thing there is that they're drinking well. So if little ones do have diarrhea and vomiting, it's very, very important to get them a rehydration solution. And for moms who don't have the recipe on hand, we have the little chatbot called Aya, who sits inside the ParentSense app and is also actually a WhatsApp configuration for Aya as well, or a WhatsApp number. And if you WhatsApp or ask Aya for a rehydration solution recipe, she'll give it to you as well. So, you know, just very importantly, make sure that you do, you know, you do keep your little ones hydrated if they do have those tummy bugs. So, but I'm glad, Julia, to hear that it's not so for Aurelia, and that she's obviously moved through it with something probably quite light then.
Yeah, I think we were lucky. And also, oh, it's just so, it's so hard when they're so sick and you just feel so terrible for them. And especially for her, because she is such a kind of relaxed, happy little baby. You know, when she is unhappy, and especially like last night, I mean, she was inconsolable. And I think it was because her tummy was sore, and maybe she was feeling nauseous, and there was nothing I could do. You know, it's not like with a temperature where actually, certainly my experience with my kids, they're relatively easy to manage. You know, you hit them with the paracetamol or the ibuprofen, and that tends to knock it on the head and keep them kind of, you know, they go back to sleep, and actually it's quite manageable. Whereas when it's a tummy bug, you actually just have to ride it out. It has to come out. So, oh, shame, it's hard. She was just so sad, that little face. And this morning when she woke up, she was exhausted because she'd been up all night. I mean, we had all been up all night. But, you know, you could just, she's really like wearing it today, shame. So anyway, she's sleeping at the moment, and I've got my monitor on. So if she starts howling, I might have to go and give her a cuddle. But she's having another epic sleep at the moment, so that's good.
Yeah, no, it is good. And they do, those sleeps, it's not that you have to wake them from them. You just have to know that they're dealing with something at that time, and they need those extra sleeps.
Yeah.
So at 32 weeks approximately, is she on the whole having 2 day sleeps, or is she still having her 3 day sleeps?
It's a bit of a mixture. It kind of depends. It's fairly frequent that she will have a short sleep in the morning, a longer sleep over lunch, and then a little short sleep in the afternoon. Otherwise, if she does have a long sleep in the morning, she tends to have a longer sleep in the afternoon as well. And then it kind of balances out. And then there's no point trying to squeeze in a last nap and then kind of get her to bed late. I just let her have a slightly longer wake window in the late afternoon. And then I put her down a little bit earlier.
Oh, spot on. That's exactly the advice that I would give. So between 6 months and 9 months, so that's about 24 weeks to 47 weeks, little ones tend to be having 3 sleeps, exactly as you said, 45 minutes in the morning, an hour to an hour and a half over midday, and then 15 to 30 minutes at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And that is absolutely typical for this age. Then they, as they approach 9 months, they then start to drop that late afternoon, because you just actually can't fit them in. And so if she is having the long sleeps, that's exactly what's happening. And that sounds absolutely spot on. So once again, Aurelia is showing us how to do it. So that is exactly how the sleeps are at this age. And how's nighttime sleep going?
This episode is brought to us by ParentSense, the all-in-one baby and parenting app that helps you make the most of your baby's first year. Don't you wish someone would just tell you everything you need to know about caring for your baby? When to feed them, how to wean them, and why they won't sleep? ParentSense app is like having a baby expert on your phone guiding you to parent with confidence. Get a flexible routine, daily tips and advice personalized for you and your little one. Download ParentSense app now from your app store and take the guesswork out of parenting.
And how's nighttime sleep going?
Yeah, it's interesting. So the last chat that we had, and in fact, when I was listening back to one of the other episodes we'd done, I realized you had told me this before and I'd forgotten it, which was the strategy of kind of listening to her at night when she is niggling. And then if she continues to niggle, giving her a dummy, not sort of immediately going straight to the dummy. And then same idea, if she continues to niggle or she wakes up again shortly thereafter, give her a little bit of boiled, cooled water and then go to the feed as the kind of last resort, as it were. So we have been doing that every single night since the last time we chat, which has been a few weeks. And it's something I was sort of interested in, I wanted to ask you about, was that it feels like we have got a sort of rhythm going with it, but not necessarily in a good way, because when I've made changes to, for example, nighttime routines with her before, I guess any routine really, she tends to respond fairly quickly. And then there's a sort of a fairly fundamental shift and things tend to sort of improve, usually depending on what it is we're trying to improve. And what I'm finding with her is that 9 times out of 10, I go through those 4 steps and we get to the point where she has a bottle, rather than the first or second step being the thing that puts her back to sleep for the rest of the night. And it was ringing a bell with me about hitting a kind of a plateau around a similar milestone with Santi, and that kind of continuing for years.
Yes. So you've got PTSD.
Yeah, no, totally. And so, you know, it feels okay because you're only still waking up like, you know, 1 or 2 very brief times in the night. But fast forward 2 years down the line, and I mean, I was borderline psychotic by the time I actually got him to sleep. So I'm very nervous of that. And I just wanted to know essentially what to expect. I'm happy to wait and kind of try it a bit longer and see what happens. I just wanted to get a sense from you on what I should expect from that kind of strategy.
Yeah. So, I mean, what time is she typically doing her first waking, which is the one where you listen and then the dummy and then the water? What time is that typically?
Look, it can vary quite wildly. It's usually around 1-ish or around 4-ish.
So she doesn't wake between 7 and 1?
No.
And then she does this 1 o'clock, and then you'll eventually feed her by what, 2 o'clock, and then she does another 1 at 4. Is that what you're saying?
No, she won't go up again at 4. It's either a sort of 1-ish wake up and we go through the cycle and I eventually feed her, or she'll start that cycle at 4, in which case sometimes I can push her to 6, but usually I have to feed her and then wake her at 6:30.
Okay. Absolutely fabulous question. So first of all, if she's only doing it 1 o'clock in the morning and that effectively means she's having kind of one night waking, that's actually not a train smash for a little one of this age. So I would probably go, what I'd probably do with her is I would probably do listen, see whether or not she resettles herself. And if she doesn't, you could actually jump straight in just with a feed and know that it's going to get her through to the morning, because she's literally having one night waking. And then you can actually see if that can actually get later and later, because one night waking at this age, it pushes out to the morning and it should be fine. So I would give her, I would listen, I'd probably give her the cool boiled water, and then the next time I would feed her. So that one I would be perfect. 4 o'clock in the morning is different. 4 o'clock in the morning is a morning feed, actually. And that one, I would just go straight to milk. I would just give her the milk and then give her the feed, and she will not generalize it to the rest of the night. So try that. So follow the same strategy as we had before for 1 o'clock or anything before 4. And if she goes all the way till 4, I would literally give her the milk. And the reason for that is sometimes we can actually cause more havoc if we start to put in things like dummying repeatedly or you know, whatever, if it kind of becomes a repeated thing. So just dealing with the hunger at 4 is actually a better way to go. So see whether or not that helps a little bit. I don't think she's sleeping badly, and I don't think that this is going to be forever. The other thing that will happen fairly soon is she'll be able to start to use her dummy on her own, and then you can just listen and actually put the dummy in her mouth and then put a whole in her hand and then put a whole lot of dummies around the cot for her. Has she started to use her dummy herself?
Yeah, so it's amazing. I mean, the last time we spoke, which was, it's a couple of weeks ago, she wasn't able to put her dummy in her mouth. And now we've sort of been practicing it, like, when I'm putting her into bed in the daytime, for example, I put it in her hand instead of in her mouth. And now she's just completely got it. So she's great, actually, at putting it back in her mouth. And I suspect the squawk I heard 20 minutes ago, which, you know, she'd been asleep for an hour and a half, was her putting her dummy back in, and now she's gone back to sleep. So that's great.
That's absolutely remarkable. So the principle here is that from about 25 weeks old, babies should start to learn to put their dummy in their mouth themselves. So 32 weeks, she's very much should be able to do that. And actually, that means that what I would do in the middle of the night is listen. I would then actually kind of pop a whole lot of dummies around her in her cot, like 3 or 4 dummies. And then if you go to her, guide her hand towards the dummy, and she will start to learn to do that herself. So, you know, she should be starting to deal with the night waking at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock with grabbing the dummy on her own. And that's kind of the target at the moment. If she really doesn't sit like that, then obviously the feed, because it's just one night feed then.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's a good strategy. I think it's also always quite helpful for me to hear this from you, because I can get a little bit in my head and a bit paranoid about, okay, or if I don't follow the steps, the whole black and white thing, I suppose. But actually, yeah, being a little bit flexible and like you say, considering 4 o'clock as a morning feed, these things are all very helpful for me to understand.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting that 4 o'clock, they often hold on to that, and it's a terrible time for us because, like, oh, you know, we don't want to get up at 4. But if we do give them that feed at 4, they then can actually tend to sleep through until 6 or even 7, you know. So it actually really is a bit of a win then, especially on a Saturday morning when nobody has to get up, or I don't know what Santi's doing, but you know, it particularly for first time babies.
Santi doesn't know that.
So Santi's up and getting up. Yeah. So, but I definitely do think that 4 a.m. you always treat differently. And, you know, often moms will say to me, can I sleep train for that 4 a.m. Feed or waking? And this all the way through into the toddler years, they ask me that. And honestly, you can't. It's such a tricky one. You have to just do what is needed to be done. And then they will generally go back to sleep and sleep until the morning. You know, I used to, even when my little ones were older, that would be the kind of the feed where I would just kind of get up, whip them into my bed, give them a bottle if they were toddlers, and let them fall back to sleep with me. And they don't tend to then, and it was a lovely cuddle in the morning and I loved it, but they don't tend to generalize that to the rest of the night. So that 4 a.m. feed is one I definitely don't panic about. It moves out on its own and will be fine. And particularly, you know, it's Cape Town and it's December in Cape Town, or you know, kind of, this podcast is actually coming out early next year, but it's sunny, you know, and 4 a.m. the sun is already starting to peek out. The birds are already starting. So, you know, it is tricky to get them, you know, whereas if you've got a winter baby, 4 a.m. is still like the dead of night. So it is easier there.
Yeah, no, that is true.
Excellent. So are there any other joys or challenges that you want to chat about?
I guess just to touch on the eating thing, we had a cool experience on the weekend where we had for the first time we went out together as a family to a restaurant. We often do go out for breakfast together because it's a nice kind of practical time for us to be out and about. And it's a lovely way to spend time together and also, you know, waste time between naps on the weekends, especially with Santi. So we went out together and we all had breakfast. And it was the first time that she's been able to sit at the table with us and eat her meal at the same time. So I literally just we've discussed it before, I'd thrown a banana in the bag and gave it to her to nibble on while we were having our breakfast. And what struck me about it was, not only was it nice that she could participate from a social point of view, which is a huge thing to do with the kind of baby-led weaning side of things, it's an important part of that strategy, but also it made me realize how important that self-feeding element is, because it meant I didn't have to stop eating my meal in order to feed her. She was completely self-feeding. She was nibbling on her banana, happy as a clam. I could eat my food, as could Vito and Santi. So it was like a genuine family meal experience, which, because of their timetables, we don't get to do so often at home in the evening, especially because she'll go down a bit earlier than Santi or whatever it is. That was a really nice little reminder for me, I think, of the value of that kind of combined approach.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and did you take your own little chair, or did the restaurant have a little chair for you, for her?
They had a chair there for us, but actually, I know, again, we talked about it recently. You had mentioned having that kind of clip-on chair at the bar counter in your kitchen. And I actually did get hold of one, and that's what she's been using most of her meals. And so we've been sitting at the same level as her. So that we also take that out with us sometimes, which is super helpful.
Yeah, I loved those. And I definitely, we took ours everywhere. It became the thing that kind of went, if we went on holiday, if we went out for meals, it was just always, it was like taking a pram. It was a standard thing that we took with us. And it really does make a difference. And, you know, I love the fact that she's eating with the family, because social eating is just, it's part of life. It's so important. So, and babies who do that tend to have much less likelihood of being fussy eaters later, because mealtimes are seen as, you know, matter of fact, go with the flow and part of the family. So that sounds like a wonderful experience for you guys.
Yeah, it was nice. And that's a very good, as you say, we were recording this in December and going into the holidays, and there'll be a lot more of that kind of thing going on. We've got obviously Christmas and things like that coming up. So lots of sort of family eating, especially in my family. So yeah, it's kind of nice to have her participate in that.
That's wonderful. Absolutely fabulous. Oh, that's good. And then one last thing before you leave us, tell us the most exciting milestone that she's reaching at the moment.
Milestones. She is the rolliest, poliest girl you've ever met. It's so funny because Santi did not roll. He could roll. He refused to. He was not interested. He did it once or twice. I was like, no, this is boring. And then he sort of managed to meet his crawling milestone literally on 9 months on the dot. So not sure how that worked, but she, if you lie her on her back, even yesterday I was actually trying to put her on her tummy to do a little bit of, you know, crawling practice. No, not interested. Wants to roll over and just basically spin around the mat for as long as I'll let her. It's quite sweet, but I think she really likes that, that movement. In fact, actually that reminds me, we were given a swing and then we put it in the garden. And I know that you've talked before about how useful that can be. I can't remember the word. What is the word for that kind of movement? Something with a P. Proprioceptive movement?
Proprioception?
Yes. That kind of movement, especially in the late afternoon. So I've been putting her in that. She loves it. She loves any kind of being thrown in the air, any kind of movement like that. She just giggles and thinks it's hilarious. She's so delighted by that kind of thing. So that's been super fun to kind of watch her experience that. And I feel like she's on her way. The little leggies are really pumping when she's lying on her tummy. So
that's lovely.
Yeah, in a couple of months' time, I think we'll have a crawler.
You definitely will. And, you know, that sense of movement that you get in that swing, which is the vestibular information and a little bit of proprioception as well, as they have to balance in it, is just so, so important for gross motor skills later on and for sleep. You know, so moms, if you've got a 32-week-old little one, kind of an 8-month-old little baby, 7 to 8-month-old, get them into a swing. It really is fabulous for them. And then, Julie, I was just having a look at the app. I have her on my ParentSense app, and I see that one of the things that should be coming up between 31 and 39 weeks is letting go. Has she started to be able to let go of things yet or not yet?
I wouldn't say so. I spend quite a large amount of my time prying things from her grippy hands, so not quite.
Excellent. So that milestone is a very interesting one. So little ones can grasp things from very early on in the first trimester after birth. So kind of at about 3 months of age, they're holding on to things, but they cannot consciously let go of things. And so quite a funny experiment to do with little ones is to give her a block in one hand and a block in the other hand, and then offer her something very interesting. And you'll see that she won't be able to let go of the one block or the other blocked in order to get the thing. And eventually at some point from 31 weeks to 39 weeks old, they work out that actually if I let go of this, I can get the next thing. So that's quite a fun game that you can play with her over the course of the next few weeks.
Cool. Shame. They're such silly little creatures.
So precious. So precious. And of course, when they do learn to let go, then they sit in their high chair and everything that gets given to them, they drop on the floor. So the dog loves it because food is all over the floor. So that'll still be coming.
Yeah. And no, I remember that vividly from Santi. I remember saying to my husband once that the ideal Mother's Day gift is not having to clean up the floor underneath where the baby or the toddler has been eating.
Yeah, sometimes it's worth just spreading a black bag there because it's just so messy.
Yeah.
Anyway, Julia, absolutely wonderful to chat again. Thank you so much for sharing so freely and for being, you know, for getting us all engaged in Aurelia's life, which has really been very precious. And I hope you get a bit of night's sleep tonight.
Thanks, Meg. I'm very excited to go to bed. As soon as possible.
Okay, we'll chat next week.
Thanks to everyone who joined us. We will see you the same time next week. Until then, download ParentSense app and take the guesswork out of parenting.